You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM.
Coal exports have been a part of BC's economy since the first days of settler colonization. The 1970s saw a vast increase in this export market, particularly as a means for U.S. mined coal to be sent abroad. On June 14th, Metro Vancouver passed a resolution opposing a new coal export terminal on the Fraser Estuary. As well, there are proposals underway to expand the Lower Mainland's two existing export terminals. To discuss these proposals, the opposition to them, we're joined by Owen Madden of the Wilderness Committee. Good morning, Owen. Welcome to Red Eye.
Good morning. It's great to be here again.
Why is there a seemingly sudden increase in interest to use BC as a coal export point?
Well, basically, this is a new product. We've never had this on our shores before. So you're right to say it's new. There was none here before 2007. Suddenly there's 9 million tons of this US-derived thermal coal. It's for energy burn. Being pushed into Vancouver, and it's supposed to go a lot bigger than that. The push is twofold. It's caused by the shift in the US from burning coal for energy over to shale gas, okay, which is cheaper, which is arguably cleaner. And those companies in the US, the big energy companies, they decided they had to get this out of North America. And the only place they could find a market for it was Asia. So China has massively ramped up its imports of US thermal coal. So the place they wanted to get it out of North America was originally Oregon and Washington. And both of those states, they had a strong movement against this. Local opposition grew, and they had a wide conversation about it, a dialogue, and it resulted in, from six large terminals, there's only three now potentially going to happen or being considered. To give you an example of how much public participation there was in Washington State, it was over 100,000 people that made submissions in relation to whether or not a huge terminal in Bellingham should proceed. So these companies looked to Vancouver, and the situation here is very, very different to the one that they face in Washington. We don't have that level of public participation. We're not allowed it because the port simply will not allow that level of public participation. So we're becoming a doormat for this industry. We're an easy out for it. And we've been caught a little bit in the headlights here. So we're desperately trying to get out there to talk to people.
So the rush is on because the coal is got a short lifespan, so to speak. It'd be like, I guess, a pile of fruit that you're worried if we don't sell it now, then the whole market changes and we're not going to make money. So we're going to have this coal sitting around in the U.S. Underground.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the attitude from the big companies like Ombre Energy, etc., etc. But the end result for us here in Vancouver is a little bit different. Once these terminals that are proposed are built, we've bought in for a generation. So they're with us for 20 or 30 years. So it's a short book for everybody else. But for us, it's a long-term legacy, a whole generation wasted on the wrong product.
And what are the developments that are being proposed here for getting rid of this American coal so they can make money off it?
Yeah, well, originally a really quiet development was West Shore. So it's an enormous terminal that we all know of that's always traditionally been an exporter of the coal that we produce here in BC. That coal is high quality, it's a steel-making coal, and it does generate jobs. And I accept that it's a different conversation from the conversation that has to come out of this idea of US thermal coal coming up here, the energy stuff. We rejected burning coal for energy a long time ago because we know it's backward and we know it creates climate change. But at West Shore, through Burlington North and Santa Fe, which is Warren Buffett, one of the richest persons in the world, his railway began to ship more and more of this US thermal stuff into the mix that was at West Shore. So the maximum they can export is 33 million tons, and it went, the proportion of that that was US thermal coal went from 0 to 9 million in the space of a couple of years. Okay, and then allied to that, Fraser Surrey Docks, a company here in Surrey, applied to build what we consider to be an absolutely new coal terminal. Okay, they've never exported coal from that facility before. The problem is that the port hasn't interpreted that as a new facility. And if they had of, it would have triggered the federal review process that we all wish for. Something like Northern Gateway, okay, that we all, we, you know, we get in, we talk about it as a community, we decide if this is in our interest or not, and environmentalists like me accept democracy first. That's not happening. So allied to that, we find out quite recently that Wyoming has had its representatives here looking for more opportunities to build even more terminals on top of what's there. So it really is a really sudden push through an area that we fear is a little bit unaware of what's happening. So at the moment, it's about getting out there, creating the conversations that the port isn't allowing to happen.
Well, I think almost everyone knows of the hazards of mining underground coal and the health hazards, particularly. But in terms of transporting it on rail cars, what are the dangers here?
Yeah. People don't really realize just how much coal dust comes from a coal train. And it's the coal dust, of course, that causes problems in the US. Just to give an example, there's communities that live near coal mining areas that have twice the rate of childhood asthma than any other community. Okay, that's the coal dust that causes that. And the coal trains that come from this area of the US called the Powder River Basin, they actually discharge an awful lot more coal than you'd realize. And the real reason we know that is that the company that does all of this shipping, Burlington Northern Santa Fe, they were actually forced before the US Congress to disclose how much of this stuff comes off each train. And the figure was close to 90,000 pounds of coal dust per train per 400-mile trip. Now, what they began to do then was apply a technical solution called a surfactant. And that's kind of like gummy bears. You spray it on top of the coal. It's supposed to sort of stop the coal dust from being emitted. Even with the best technology out there, you're still talking about 12,000 pounds of coal dust per shipment. It is spread out over a 400-mile journey. We know that. But it's been proven to be destructive to the community health all along the train tracks. It's slightly worse at the mining site, and it's still a presence, a problem all the way along the route. So given a place like White Rock or Crescent Beach, which is used to two fully laden trains passing by and two empty trains coming back down the tracks, if you start tripling those amounts, you get a lot more coal dust in the air. And then, of course, there's the greater impact to our health of climate change, which is totally funded by burning coal for energy. Delta is a very low-lying region, and they've been trying to map what Delta is actually going to suffer from this. They being a government body, it's called a Delta Region Adaption Collaborative, and I'd urge all of your listeners to check that out. And they've mapped what will happen. You know, the last time we had this much carbon in the atmosphere, 400 parts per million, the sea levels were 3 meters higher. And Delta, as you know, is a completely low-lying region. So we're looking at the impact on humans of the onslaught of climate change in the short term. To take it to a personal level, they've mapped out what will happen North Vancouver as we lose our snow line up the mountainside. And it's, you know, obviously it doesn't look great until you realize that it's actually our drinking water. That snow melts our drinking water, and then you begin to realize the human impact of all this. So given all of those reasons, it's not surprising that folks are out against it.
Well, who's advocating for it here?
Who advocates for it here is representative. There's an organization called the Coal Alliance. So I picked them out as the main lobbyist in favor of this. Their representative is a guy called Alan Fryer. And I've heard him speak at the board of Metro Vancouver hearings recently. Their arguments are quite simple. They say that how dare we deprive places like China of the energy that we've all benefited from by trying to oppose this. It's almost uncharitable or ignorant of us to stop their energy supply from being coal. But we know that the pressure in China right now is on the government to shift to renewable energies because the communities there just cannot live with the level of dirty air that they're forced to live with the burning of coal for energy. So to say that you're going to push this on China and that it's wrong to say otherwise, it's not taking responsibility for something we took responsibility for a long time ago. The argument doesn't fly. Other arguments are, you know, jobs. Well, Fraser Surrey Docks will create 25 jobs. For the impact it's going to have on our communities, it's just not worth it. There are further jobs, they say, that they speak about more jobs being created in the supply chain up as far as 50, but there's 25 direct jobs in the Surrey area. So all in all, it's a bad deal for BC. Folks can see that. I mean, we're for trade. We absolutely know this is a port city and that we need to be trading goods. It's what we do. But not this good. This needs to be separated from everything, including BC steelmaking coal, and treated differently.
You touched on this a little bit at the beginning, but maybe you can go into that more. In the U.S., there seem to be different openings or opportunities for pushing back on the coal going through places in ports in the United States. Some cities, I think, have turned it down flat. I heard the mayor, I think the mayor of Seattle, was speaking against it. What kinds of opportunities they have in the U.S. that aren't here or aren't being used, maybe here, but aren't being used?
Yeah, the scoping mechanism in the United States is what we're speaking about. So they actually sit down and they scope out something like a coal terminal. What's the impact? You know, both sort of long chain, you know, all the way out as far as climate change and all the way down to the local level, like, you know, being stopped at a level crossing because there's three times as many trains coming by and emergency crews can't get to you. So they opened up the public discourse, the conversation, to as many people as could possibly, you know, involve themselves, who could possibly be affected by this. And those figures ran over 100,000. Now, you look at Vancouver here, the port itself is a federally governed body, and it does have the power to trigger a public hearing in relation to these coal export plans, and has refused to do so. And we've been into the port, we went to their board meeting quite recently and asked them, please let people in here. The most important people being our physicians, our health bodies, who have, such as the BC Lung Association, written to the port and said, let us into this. You know, let's have a conversation about it, a public dialogue or forum. It's been refused time and time and time again. The mantra is quite simple from the port. They say, we're only looking to maintain trade. We're not looking at what is traded, which is a funny way to look at things. So, yeah, there's a huge difference between what people have been afforded in Washington State and what people are afforded here in the Lower Mainland. And whether you're for or against coal, you're always for your democratic rights. They're what we fight for. You have to. And as an environmentalist, I have to accept if that democratic right is exercised, and we all have a mature, informed conversation about this, we decide, yes, this is absolutely what we want to do, then I have to back off and I have to keep my mouth shut and I have to accept that. Okay, that's not happening. It is not happening. And we're sort of left trying to catch up with the information game. We've had a community meeting once a week at this stage, attended by 100 to 130 people in different communities such as Delta, Surrey, White Rock, another area of Surrey we're going to next week. And that gives us the opportunity to have the conversation that the port are refusing us. And we've had physicians up from the US talk about the direct impact of diesel particulates and coal dust, way more sort of impactful on your body than I could have ever even imagined. And I tend to speak to the actual impact of climate change, because it's my job. I'm a climate campaigner. So between myself and the physicians, we're really allowing people to go away and have a consideration about it. We don't hide the fact that there's jobs created by this, and we don't shirk away from the fact that BC steelmaking coal has been a job creator in this province. We just leave it for them to decide.
And how have the media, in your opinion, covered this? If the Port Authority is not prepared to grant the hearings that allow for the democratic exchange of ideas and the stimulus for reflection, have the media been in any way encouraging?
Well, you know, folks hear about, you know, NIMBYism and a group that doesn't like coal, and they immediately sort of freak out about it, and they think that, you know, we're against every single development there could ever be. There's a very, very tiny percentage of all the industrial processes that happen here in this province that get opposed by anyone. So that's a fact. They don't make the distinction between BC coal and US energy coal. Okay, and that's very, very important. It's my job, actually, that I have to make sure that distinction is in place, because it is a completely different conversation. But it's the legacy. coal and fossil fuels, to some extent, are almost part of the DNA here because it's happened for so long. I compared a little bit to trying to get the Irish to stop drinking. You know, it's just to try and get that message across. You know, we don't need to do this anymore. And I think climate change will allow people to really see the benefits of, economically more than anything else, of addressing these exports and saying, there's a cleaner way to do things. We have the best people in the world to generate the next generation of energy projects, and they have the technologies. Geothermal, solar, you name it. And what happens is these graduates leave SFU or UBC or UVic and they head down to the US or Germany where they'll get a job. So we're unlocking a whole new industry. We're unlocking a whole new economy. It's not jobs versus this thing. There's lots of jobs in dealing with this thing versus the mere 25 if we don't.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Owen.
Thanks for having me.
I've been speaking with Owen Madden. He's the climate campaigner with the Wilderness Committee, and to learn more about this issue as well as other campaigns, you contact their website and they'll have all that information there. It's wildernesscommittee.org.